Mornings on FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, let's kick off this show with Midlake, Acts of Man. Hey, what a cracking start.
This was never meant to be, and I don't feel it is. Drifting wayward out to sea, a simple and beautiful scene.
There, that wasn't Midlake. No, I put on the wrong button. I think I'm having a stroke. You're listening to FUBAR Sunday at Sean Hughes. That was Foxjaw Bounty Hunter, cracking name, and a song called Hatch 16. Let's get straight on with the guest. Ziggy Lickman's come in from I have to say from Big Brother, but obviously you've done lots of other things.
A few other things, yeah.
You started off as in a boy band
years ago. And a long time ago. Sorry, yeah, I started off in a band called Northern Line.
Your mic technique wasn't great.
It was terrible in the band, so nothing would have changed.
So what age were you when you did that then?
I joined when I was 17. I left school to join.
And what kind of music was it?
It was terrible pop.
Sounds
really
good to
bad
me.
Boy band kind of dance moves, meant to be in sync, that kind of thing. But we had one song which I still think could probably do well today, but apart from that.
But so did you have a manager who was making you do all that nonsense?
Yes, our manager was Ashley Tabor, who now owns Capital Radio.
Well, surely you
can. Yeah, well, you I've been knocking still on the door. He's not opening. So,
so he owns Capital Radio?
Yeah, he bought, I think he bought Capital and the whole group maybe three, four years ago. Yeah.
So he's done all right for himself then?
He's done all right for himself. He comes from quite a, quite an influential family.
So what, you're just saying money stays with money, Ziggy, yeah?
I think so, yeah. Those with money.
Lay the dirt on
those with money help money. Help each other with
money. Lay the dirt
on
them, yeah. Ziggy.
He was a good guy. I think we were kind of like the guinea pigs. Obviously, I was oblivious to what was going on.
But was it a situation where was there a little lad in the paper saying we're looking for a boy band? Or
no, I was doing a fashion show for a friend at Topshop. And then he came
that
up.
Was
yeah,
going so
it sounds
well,
so dubious.
You said Topshop.
Top, yeah, I know, at Topshop.
I was doing a fashion shoot for Topshop.
For Topshop, yeah.
Good on you. And so what? And then he, what, you said?
He just came up and said, yeah, do you fancy being in a boy band? And I was like, yeah.
Did he even say, can you sing?
Yeah, he did.
Did he make you sing in Topshop?
No. He sent me and another guy to a studio maybe a couple of weeks later.
A yeah. couple of weeks later? So there's no fucking about with this guy,
there
was
no
it?
Fucking about, no.
And
no.
So that band lasted for how long?
That was 4 years?
So that's
four
not
and a
bad.
Half, long time. No, we released here, released three songs here, moved over to the States, signed with Jennifer Lopez, manager Benny Medina. He went to some really fucked up pool parties. And
you
and
were
shit.
Like 17.
I was 17. I was 90, just turned 20 when I moved to LA.
So was that a real headspace where you thought, I'm going to be super famous then?
Yeah, we got told we were going to be.
And were you given a wage or were you given money to live the dream?
Yeah, when I made all the wrong choices from early.
We all
yeah.
do, Ziggy.
So
don't
like,
worry about that.
We had like a certain pot that we all had and you could choose what you wanted to spend it. So I at 17 was in Chelsea Harbour on the front, one bedroom.
Well, you actually bought a flat?
No, rented, but it was extortionate rent.
Never
that kind
rent.
Of thing. It was stupid, right. Yeah.
And so you weren't all living together like the monkeys?
We did the first year, yeah.
And do you hang out with any of them now or do you hate each other?
No, I saw one a couple of days ago. One's doing very, very well. One's a songwriter, so he's doing very well. He wrote the X Factor tune. He wrote, I think, Britain's Got Talent tune.
What you mean, like the
theme tunes?
Right.
He's writing at the moment with Michael Bolton. I still speak to him. He's in LA.
Again, another set that's going well till you mentioned Michael Bolton. So you
yeah,
tease
yeah.
me. You give me great starts. To
I,
th- these
I thought Michael was exceptional in his day. Exceptional.
I see. I could never really go there. Is that the kind of music you like then?
No, not at all.
Right.
At all.
So then it was like tail between your legs coming back from America. Was it all over?
Came back from America. Unfortunately, one of the guys' dad passed away. Sorry, I'm banging on the floor.
You heard,
yes.
You really
annoying.
Want to be a
annoying. Annoying.
A drummer.
A drummer. Yes, I do. The first one. I want right. to be the first drummer.
I'll join in a minute.
Cool.
But so right. So what that means? Well, his dad passed away. So then what?
He took a bit of time off. We came back and we decided to maybe look for another member because he wanted to leave. Then it kind of just disbanded.
Yeah. And was the manager still in place at that point?
The manager was still in place, yeah.
Right, and so then was that kind of... was that like pretty much thrown on the scrap heap?
Yeah, kind of. There was two of us who were quite naughty and there were three who were quite well behaved.
Right.
So we kind of... We took a separating, if right. you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was me and Dan, who I'm still very good. We just did some, we just indulged in the lifestyle and you know regularly and.
Well, you what drugs?
Just we had a lot of fun and we had to take a test and we failed. So.
Sorry, what do you mean you had to take a test? Were you still in school?
No, many years ago, there weren't many bands around. So
right.
for us to be put in the mold that we were meant to be, which was like kind of a pretty boy pop group. We kind of wanted to fight against that because we thought we were a bit more than that. So,
yeah,
so we just partied hard.
And so what, then they said, but when you say you took a test and you failed it?
Well, just a life test. It's a general
right.
test.
Yeah,
I thought
the manager was making you do a drugs test.
No, just like they assessed our
right.
behaviour and said you two need to kind of remove yourself. And
oh, and they kept the others?
Kind of, but only for like a few months.
Right, because
yeah.
surely it's less to do, like, because that would make headlines, surely, if you were misbehaving. I think it isn't always to do with money, it's always to do with sales.
It's all to do with sales, yeah.
Yeah. So then after that, you thought, was it an attitude of fuck you, then I'm going to make it my own way, or?
No, not at all. It was more of a, I just had the craziest kind of 4 years
yeah.
at a young age, and
yeah.
so I my parents took me back out again and kind of, I don't know. I just, it was a bit of a whirlwind. So then I had to get back to normal life, and you know, I left school for it as well. So
what was the next thing, the big thing in your life? Actually, look, let's play a tune. I might as well play this.
No, Happy Days, yeah.
And then you can tell us how you started readjusting to life.
Fine.
As a civilian.
Right, as a civilian.
This time it is Midlake. Midlake, Acts of Man. I am here with Ziggy Lickman, who's I always have a Big Brother contestant on, but you know not so far. Because I'm weirdly, initially, I wanted to see how crazy you all were, but you've all been fairly...
normal.
Yeah, which surprised me.
It depends. I think it depends on who you've probably seen, because I could tell you a few who I met.
That's what everyone
or
says.
Or live with who weren't normal.
Right. Yeah. But so right, we got on to you were living back with your mum and dad.
Yeah.
The pop star thing didn't happen. What was going on after that?
After that, I went into the club world. So I was in nightclubs. So I was running like front doors.
What, like a bouncer?
No, kind of more like a... Do you ever watch Roadhouse, Patrick Swayze? But not, I wasn't like him, but I was like someone stood on doors and... No, okay, fine.
So what, but who besides the bouncers hangs on the
door? No, you had security, and then I would kind of do the guest list, say who can come in.
Okay, so hospitality.
Hospitality.
Right.
So I managed to travel around quite a bit. I went back to LA to do a club there and do quite a bit. I still kind of am involved in it now.
Right, so what, you get the guest list together so people will be names and then...
The club will decide who the list is, and then I kind of, myself and maybe one other would... It's kind of like accepting if someone comes into a place or not. If someone's dressed in shorts and the policy is like... Is
no
jeans,
shorts.
No shorts. Yeah, no shorts. Then you have to install this policy.
Even though they're on the guest list?
Yes, and then come up with an excuse why they can't come in without hurting their feelings.
And what was the worst excuse you gave to anyone?
Worst excuse? I'm quite careful about offending someone.
Yeah, but that's not...
worst excuse? They have a policy if a lot of these West End clubs have a policy if someone's not the right kind of shape to come in.
Ugly. You're not allowed to let ugly people.
I'm being... No.
Is there an actual thing where they say, look, don't let ugly people into the club?
An owner will come up to you and say, you know, yeah, for sure. He's just brutally honest. He doesn't want... But they will never, ever stick themselves on the front line because they wouldn't have the balls to speak to someone. But I think it's more of a...
Do you have to make a judgment call and go, nah, you're a bit of a...
Yeah, but it's never done in a nasty way. It's never done in a...
Well, just tell them they can't come in is pretty nasty.
Or you just say guest list is closed, but who am I to decide if someone can come in? I'm just seeing out orders, basically.
And were these, like, well-known people? Like,
it could be anyone.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that sounds, like, fairly shallow. Did you enjoy it?
I hated it.
Right.
I still do.
Don't do it. Don't do it,
Jamie. No, I'm not so much in it now. So right. I'm still in nightclubs, but I'm more in restaurant side now, so...
What, you're the guy who lets people into restaurants?
No, I let them out of the fire exit, basically.
You're too ugly, you're not eating in here.
No. Go on.
Right, so then what? That's what you're doing now. So then, right, so after the nightclubs, is that when Big Brother came along?
Big Brother came along. I met one of the producers at a club.
You know what I
mean? Looked after him that night. They said, how... would I find you? And I was like, I was doing a very, very small, minute piece of modelling at the time with an agency.
Topshop.
Yeah, Topshop gave me a call back. They said, you know...
It's always good to get the
Topshop
call back.
You astonished us the first time around. I was doing okay what I was doing at the time, but I saw Big Brother as like a summer opportunity. I never really watched it. I looked at it really as like a go-in meal ticket. Make as much money as possible.
Right.
Yeah, that's all it was. Like, I sat down with my brother and sister the night before I decided to do it, and I'm from quite a close family, so we all decided, let's just do this, see what happens.
What age were you when you were in there?
26.
So that's an age that you...
I know what I'm doing, yeah. Yeah. There was no...
Because, like, I obviously, you know, they all kind of mingle into one after a while, but were you a bit of a troublemaker in there?
No, not so much.
So what would people really...
I think...
Were you the guy at the door going...
I had to let anyone in and none of them...
And you won!
The funny thing is that after I finished Big Brother, I went back into work maybe 6 months after.
Why? Because all the kind of...
I just did. I did the PAs, but I didn't do any like Big Brother, Little Brother, or I didn't do any TV shows. I chose not to do any shows to sit down and talk about it.
But were you hoping? What were you hoping that the Big Brother experience would launch you into career-wise?
Nothing. I was never looking.
So just a cash cow.
Literally, it was fun. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Money. And as Liam said, like you had him on before, he said, you know, we were. I remember one day I got like £12,000 for walking into
Topshop.
No, they decided not to let me in this day after Big Brother. That's a joke, by the way. It was going into an office for 45 minutes and then going to a club that evening and then going for dinner with the owner of the club.
Okay.
And this was maybe 4 or 5 days after I come out of Big Brother.
So what do you mean you went into the office?
I went into the office that he owned,
right?
Then the club that he owned that evening, and then out for dinner with him and his family. And the most odd thing, out sitting with this guy and his family. It's like...
Did you like him?
He was fine. They were cool. They were like...
But, like, seriously, did you feel like... Because, obviously, he's bought you for the night.
Yeah.
In every way. So did you feel a bit like a prostitute?
Not one bit. I felt kind of still on this wave of Big Brother, and it was almost like... You just think, well, let's just carry on.
I don't blame you.
But, yeah, of course, there's an element of prostitution. That night got a little bit weird, so there is an element of prostitution about that.
You were at his beck and call, like, when he...
No, nothing like that. He couldn't... I had to meet and greet half an hour in the club. People... He gave me, like... He owned the hotel that the club was adjoined to. He gave me a free tab, whatever I wanted. It was just like... You know, now I could probably call the guy. The guy wouldn't even pick up.
Yeah. Well, that's
bullshit. Yeah. But it's bullshit. I was taken on a journey and you know...
But so it was only 12 months, 6 months, and then the
I did 6 months of PAs and stuff like that, travelled quite a bit.
But, like, you've got a very recognisable face. People will still know you today from Big Brother, wouldn't they?
I still get sometimes, yeah. But, like, it's never like, oh, you're the geezer from Big Brother. It's like...
Does anyone ever go, hey, are you from Northern Line?
Nah. Just my mum when I come through. I remember you.
But so I'm surprised. I thought you'd get a year out of it because, like, it is that, like, just thrown to the lines, but you get cash.
I got I got 2 years out of it,
right.
But I got 6 months of directing all my time to it.
Yeah.
You know, I had a driver driving to different places. Right. You know, you're paying people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone was taking a cut. You find everyone is taking a cut of what you're earning.
You seem bright enough to know. Why did you let those people take?
Because they're still allowed, because they book you.
Right.
After a while, I got bored of drinking, bored of PAs, bored of it, the shallow kind of standing there. And also, you've got nothing. This is 7 years, 8 years on now, so I had nothing to say. As much as I probably have now, but maybe I actually enjoy it more now because I've had time away.
But like, that's the thing, like, because like, I guess with Northern Line, with the band, you weren't really a celeb because it didn't really go anywhere. But then Big Brother, you were total celebrity then for 6 months.
Our year was the last year, I would say, and a lot of people will say that was where you could earn money.
Yeah, because
beyond
did
papers,
you go out with Chantel.
I went out Chanel.
Chanel.
Yeah, but
was that a thing where let's make some more money if we're seen together, or were you actually going out?
It was never said in between. It was just for fun. It was like a.
But was that a thing that people said? Well, if you two are seen together, you're.
Yeah, because everyone thinks that kind of thing in that show.
I know.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
So I mean, it works, I guess. You know.
But was there ever a proper romance there, though?
Yeah, there was, but there was never like a. Oh, I'm going to be with this person for a while. She was always, she always had an element to me of that she was just going to blow up at any stage. Right. So, you know, you're walking on kind of eggshells.
So, is it after that when you start when all that Big Brother thing calmed down? Then did you want to become a cage fighter?
I did it for a while.
Why the hell? That sounds like the most ridiculous thing.
It was never. It was more of a. It started off as a charity thing. And I just started training. I just trained. I was.
You never fought?
No, I had like a charity kind of bout where it was head guard and stuff like that. Right. But I mean, unfortunately, I had a snowboarding accident about 5 years ago, which stopped me from doing any kind of physical activity.
Well, do you seem all right? Have you got a bad injury?
Yeah, my whole shoulder, yeah. But we won't get into it now. It's so boring, honestly.
Give you that massage?
Well, I mean, you so maybe you not.
Oh, jeez.
But the girl in the other room? No,
fairly decent looking fella. I've got the experience.
No, you are.
Got the experience.
If you've got some, you've got any lemon essence kind of oil or anything going flying around? Or
got some lem sips.
Yeah. So I'm not too sure that'll work.
So what are you up to now, then? Besides not letting people into restaurants.
Okay, so now I am. This is an opportunity for me to say what I'm doing, obviously.
Yeah,
as you just asked me to do.
Absolutely.
I've launched a sushi brand, which is called Pom Poms.
A sushi like brand.
Yeah, it's called Pom Poms. It's been set up as like a pop up restaurant opening in a couple of weeks in No. 5 Cavendish Hotel.
Right.
So that I'm doing, and then
have you got some big investor behind you there?
No.
This is you.
Yeah.
What are you big? Do you know all your sushi?
I know quite. Yeah, I've gone to places to learn, and I've
Ziggy, don't tell me you've eaten in a couple of sushi.
No. My whole has always been kind of, if I'm not doing something, then I'll go back to work in hospitality.
Right.
So I'm happy to I love work and I like grafting.
So you're kind of, your fallback is always hospitality.
Yeah, it's what I trained that to do. And
but you're in management now as well. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I've got about 4 or 5 things I'm doing at the moment.
What go? Tell me.
So I'm doing sushi. I've set up a
pom
pom. It's called Pom Poms, and I'm opening in where I live, which is Queens Parkway.
Don't
you know where you live? Why? The more the merrier. The more the merrier. Come.
All right. Well, there
I live in Queens Park. I live on Windermere Avenue. And opening like a little gyoza bar. Do you know gyoza?
Yeah.
So I'm bringing something from, which happened in Paris at the moment. Went to see it. It's really cool. Bring it to London. Hopefully can develop it into like a brand.
But it sounds like you need a lot of money for that, though.
You need money to start. You can't do it being a broke, but you can definitely. I haven't got £200,000, but I've saved and I've invested and property
nice
and stuff like that.
It.
Thank you.
Very, very happy for you. So that's what you're...
So is Liam.
Yeah,
he bought... He's my mate, and we both had good advice from people around us, and we both bought as soon as we came out of Big Brother.
Good on you.
Straight away.
What are the other fingers and pies?
I am launching like an app, which is called Hutching Up. So it's like a Facebook for travel.
Right.
I can say only so much.
Okay.
No, because there are other people involved in it, but it is it was my original idea. Not trying to blow my own trumpet, but it's all about travelling.
Kicking the
No, I'm doing this. I'm doing this.
So, right, right. Well, we won't talk about that because it makes no sense.
It's basically about when you go somewhere, you hutch up. It's like a travel. So you're hutching up. You're basically
meeting people who are in that
meeting location. People travel. You say you give people kind of recommendation. If you stay somewhere for the night, right. They give you a point. You give them a point.
Right. It's called Expedia.
No, it's not. You don't have to pay anything apart from just me.
But you don't pay Expedia anything.
I don't use it.
Yeah, but anyway, but I'm just in
the travel website, Expedia. Yeah, I haven't travelled in a while.
Yeah, see, you got,
we need to go away. You and me, we need to go away.
You've been into a sushi restaurant. You're going,
we need to go away.
You sound like someone who wakes up every day and goes, I'm going to try this today, which is a good thing to do.
It's not the case. I'm disorganised, but I'm also organised in a disorganised way.
Right. And so you're in management, like, which... Who are you managing now at the moment?
Lucien. But it was never management. It kind of just got put across. I had to put in kind of red pages that I was his manager and stuff. He's a close friend of mine.
He's the actor, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, he's out in the States. Right. Absolutely, he's smashing it.
Are you on 15% of his
I'm not, no. Because I was never involved in the acting.
Ziggy, are you getting any of that?
It's an investment,
Ziggy,
as friends.
Are you getting any of
at
that?
At some stage I will, yeah.
Right.
Of course.
Is there a contract? Because it's like, you know, people go to America.
Well, everything's got a contract. Yeah. Everything's
right, he's doing very well. Because he was in Coronation Street and Waterloo Road.
Yeah.
Very good looking black actor.
Yeah,
So is he playing Americans over
there?
He's
done two pilots, two big shows out there. One is going to get picked up, no problem.
Okay. And then your quid's in then, yeah?
Then he'll be like, hey, Luce, how you doing? Remember me? No.
You say, come and meet me in their pom-poms.
Come down to pom-poms. Bring your best outfit.
And so you better be dressed well because I'm not letting people in. Don't let ugly people in.
I see what you've done there. You've wrapped everything
up. I'm wrapping everything up for the end. But so that's everything you're up to now, yeah?
Yep.
And were you asked to go into Big Brother for the second time as well?
Yeah, there were talks to do it.
That's a no, then.
No, not... you basically had the option. They sent an email around to everyone saying, would you like to be put up for it, the shortlist of the next one? So you could say, yes, I do, or no, I don't. I said, no, I don't.
Well, because you... But again,
the shortlist could have been 1,000 people. No, I was done after it. I was happily done.
And so do you feel there's any scars from the whole Big Brother thing? Or I suppose Northern Line had kind of gotten used to that anyway.
Oh, full of scars. Full of scars of everything. Okay. Everything, yeah.
Well, look, you're looking good. Thanks so much for coming
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Good luck with pom-poms.
Appreciate it.
I'm vegetarian, so as long as you're eating some of that. Here's, like you said, you're a big fan of John Newman, so I'll finish this.
I am a big fan of John.
With one of his hits.
It could be any one of them.
He's only got three.
One of the three, then.
Cheers, Ziggy. Thanks very much.
Your heart torn, is that what devils do? Took you so long, where only fools go. I shook the angel and you. Now I'm rising from the crowd, rising up to you. Filled with all the strength I find, there's nothing I can't do.
likes me a bit of pop every so often there. You're listening to FUBAR, Sean Hughes. Listen, we've got Danny Wallace coming in. You will know Danny. Let's pick him up now. He's a British filmmaker, comedian, writer, actor, and presenter of radio and television. Probably won't need me in the room, but let's have some very angry music now. Here's a Dean Shanker from Prolapse. Scottish people there. And our next guest, Danny Wallace, is Scottish, born in Dundee. You kept that a secret, fella.
I did, yeah. Well, you know, not from people in Dundee when I was growing up. They knew I was there. But yeah.
Where did the accent go?
It went into the ether. We moved to Loughborough when I was about 7 or 8, and I don't think anyone had ever moved to Loughborough before.
Well, where's that in the...
In the East Midlands.
Right. Yeah.
You know, near Ashby de la Zouche.
Well, where's that accent gone then?
It just went. I got a part in the school play when Ian McCaskill was at the height of his powers, and having a Scottish accent, they went, "You can play the Scottish weatherman." So I got up and I did my part. The dress rehearsal went perfectly, but on the night I did it, I unleashed my accent, and I just saw a sea of open, terrified mouths as people were like, what's happened to him? What's this voice? So sort of 6 weeks later, I was speaking like this, but a little bit higher.
But did you go to, were you sent to elocution lessons?
No, I had to fit in. I'm an only child, had to make friends, had to be understood. So ended up speaking like this.
Well, you're an only child, but also means you're the oldest and the youngest.
I know. I tick all the boxes, don't I?
And what's your star sign since we're onto it?
Scorpio.
Seriously?
Yeah, you never thought that, would you?
I'm Scorpio.
Are you?
But have you got what?
That's why there's this sexual tension.
Very much so. I've got a stiffy on. But what is your date then?
16th of November.
See, 10. I'm 10 November. Now, the only thing I look, obviously, you know, fucking this is bullshit, all that stuff. But the one thing is, like, I do have scorpion traits.
Like what? What are they supposed to be?
Well, the sting and the tail.
Like, is that really what it is? Is that what this is all based on?
Well, not all of it, but, like, are you one of those people? I tend to, like, I'll get my own back on people who let me down.
Do you?
Yeah,
you are looking at me in quite a, you know, it was almost sort of mafioso.
You've never done me any harm, Danny.
Yeah. I see. So you're very vengeful, are you?
Yeah.
And
mean-spirited.
But do you wait for your revenge or do you go for instant revenge?
A bit of both.
Really?
Whichever is going to.
Like, do you enjoy waiting for revenge?
Yeah, I do. Like, I just, in general, I think I'm a decent person. But if you cross me, you're fucked.
Oh man!
But are you not like that?
I'm not. I don't think I'm exactly like that. Which I, you know, but I'm not saying that all star signs are there for you know, it's nonsense.
What traits have you got of the Scorpio?
I don't know. Okay, so give me five traits, and I'll tell you.
Well, let's say great lovers. I'm not one of those.
Boom. Yes.
You got that? Yeah.
Yeah, that's straight in the bag.
Right.
Okay. I've no idea.
Have you got any photographic proof? Records being set?
No, not that I know of.
Because the last time I saw you, now I wanted to know because it was when you were doing the morning show on XFM.
That's right.
Were you enjoying that?
I was enjoying that greatly.
Because you didn't look like you were.
Well, it depends on the interviewee.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that. But no, but it's just that thing of, I remember asking you, like, what new bands are there? And you didn't seem to care.
Oh, well, I think that's unfair.
This is just a question. No, this is not a judgment.
Probably because we're quite heavily playlisted at XFM, whereas you can play anything you want. So for me, you're asking me what new bands. I was kind of thinking, well, what's the new one from Kasabian? Because, you know, it was kind of like that.
But you enjoyed it, though.
I loved it. The one thing I didn't enjoy was getting up incredibly early because I had to, you know, start the show at 6 a.m. So you're getting up.
Yeah, what time?
Well, you can ask any breakfast show host what time they get up, and no one will ever say, like, 4 or 4.30 or 5. They will tell you 4.36 or 5.01, and it all depends where they live.
It's a typical Scorpion.
Yes, it really. Yeah. Pernickety.
Yeah.
But every minute counts at that time in the morning. Yeah. So.
But you have a young child, though, yeah?
I do.
Right, and so did you have the young child then?
Yes, I did.
So it was a blessing you leaving the house.
Well, that's what I thought. I was kind of like, you know, this will be all right. I'm sort of up all the time anyway. I don't get any sleep whatsoever. But 3 months into doing the show, I literally couldn't remember having agreed to do it. It was kind of like, well, this is. I was so tired.
That's the day I met you.
But it was great, and I did it for a couple of years, and I loved working with the team I was working with. It's a bit sort of like childbirth, I think. You forget about the pain of the early mornings and the winters when you get up and it's dark and you do your show and it's dark outside, you go home, you have a quick nap, you wake up and it's dark again.
Yeah,
you know,
you're bringing everyone down. Man, thank God summer's coming.
Yeah, it is.
So 2 years you did that though.
I did it for 18 months.
Right, you got sacked. Yeah.
I chose to write a book instead. I thought I could do both at once. I thought my days will be clear, it'll all be fine, but I could only do the show.
But the show was what, 2 hours long?
Four.
Oh my God, that is a long show.
That's right. Yeah, long old show. And quite, you know, a lot of writing during it as well. I notice you've got no notes in front of you whatsoever.
Yeah, it just says born in Dundee, Scotland, in 1979.
There you go, 76.
And then grew up in Bath.
Grew up in Bath and Loughborough and Berlin. Yeah, all those places.
Berlin's not on here.
Well, that's the most interesting thing about me.
So was your dad a spy?
Hey, he might as well have been. In fact, we were spied upon by actual spies.
Google.
Yeah, yeah.
They're looking at us all.
Yeah, but we had KGB on our case. We had Stasi, the East German secret state police.
Why, what did your dad do?
He's an academic, but he's an expert in East Germany, right? And so he was always going to East Germany at a time where people weren't allowed in.
He's an expert on East Germany?
On East Germany and East German literature. So he was always going back and forth, and people wanted to know what he was up to and who he was talking to, whether they were getting revolutionary ideas. And so our phone was tapped. When we were growing up in Dundee, my dad would make a phone call, and then he might sort of, he puts the phone down. Oh, I forgot to say that thing. Pick the phone up again, start to dial, and he'd hear his conversation being played back in a van.
Is he a Russian guy going, this world is filled, I do not trust.
Yeah, exactly.
But he isn't German, though, your dad,
no,
is he?
No, he's not, no.
But surely, like, I'm sure he was great academic, but yeah. surely an East German would probably be better about yeah. East Germany.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But, you know, there
like
wasn't much freedom for them.
It's like going over to Lithuania and going, I'm the expert.
Yeah.
Ask yeah. me what you want.
Well, you know, I try and talk to my dad about his specialist chosen subject, but it's all way above my head. Mostly in German.
It'll be a crap specialist subject mastermind.
It would. But have you ever done that?
No, I don't. See, I have done all I can not to be a celebrity. So everything that says celebrity...
He says just, on the radio.
This isn't a celebrity. It's just like playing tunes. But so were you living actually in East Berlin then?
We went as the wall was teetering, because as it sort of started to go, my dad was like, well, I've got to be there for my job. I've got to watch this happen. And so we all got in a camper van and just drove to Germany. And we drove in front of the Brandenburg Gate. I remember when we arrived.
What age were you now?
I was about 12, 13, 12 I was.
Right. What sort of accent did you have? This German accent?
It was more of an East Midlands one.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And
like Slade?
Very much like Slade. Right. Very
Ooh,
much
look,
like that.
The wall's coming down.
Yeah. Yeah. So moved there, but it was when East and West was as one.
Right. Because I did a film in East Germany.
Did you?
Yeah, and the studio was the same one that Marlene Dietrich used to make. And also, it was great because they used to make all the propaganda documentaries there, you know, where farmers going, I love and lie!
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then being handcuffed afterwards. So, yeah, did you travel around anywhere else then?
When we're in Germany?
No, but in general, because, so far as Bath, Loughborough, Dundee.
Well, most of my family are Swiss.
Right.
So I grew up, you know, going to Switzerland quite a lot and hanging out with those guys, which is why it was a weird thing because, when I was 6 or 7, they gave me a Smurf and I was very happy to receive this Smurf and they could see the delight all over my eyes. But because I didn't see them all the time, you could tell at birthdays and Christmases, they're always thinking, we should get something for Daniel. What
Sorry,
does he
for
like?
For a second, I thought you didn't see the Smurfs all the time, but you're talking about your relatives.
Yes, yeah, my relatives who bought me Smurfs.
Yeah. They gave me a Smurf, but then I just didn't see them.
Yeah. I'm thinking Danny's lost it. Yeah, he's having to invent history now.
So, right.
So until I was 15, they were sending me Smurfs, essentially.
Right. Not chocolate or Nazi gold?
No, none of that. No, I haven't seen a single piece of Nazi gold.
So I've been to Switzerland. It is a bit shit, isn't it?
Well, it's my mum isn't a big fan, and she is Swiss.
Right.
And yet she still wanted me to get a Swiss passport.
Right, so she's Swiss. Your dad's English, right?
Yeah. On the borders, yeah, Carlisle.
Right.
And I was born in Dundee.
Yeah. Well, I've said that 4 times. So,
yeah. You know. And I recently found out because up
there... He's pointing his finger. This could be a big point.
This will be big news. Up there, all your sort of records, your genealogy, your family history are all accessible. Yeah. And this lady, a romantic novelist by the name of Eileen Townsend, who's written books such as, I believe, The Love Child and The Other Woman, she started looking into my family and found out that my dad's 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 dad.
Great great grandfather, that is.
Yeah, like 25
you're
times in a row.
When you're ringing up, those people go, who are you looking for? I'm looking for my dad's 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 dad.
My point is a pure paternal line, all right? Yeah. Not my dad's sister's right. cousin's
my
auntie.
Father's 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 father.
Yeah, that's a better way of saying it. It's posher. Was Sir John Wallace, who was William Wallace's brother. William didn't have kids, so I am the closest you're going to get to Braveheart.
Wowzer! So, what do you think of Scottish independence then?
Well, I think it would be—I think it'd be a good thing, mainly because they wouldn't have to. I mean, they can't have the Queen of England, can they, as a monarch? So, who are they going to get? There's no
well,
direct.
It'll be a republic.
Well, what if it's not? What if I'm saying I'm right here?
Yeah,
I've got the paperwork.
But you haven't even got the accent.
My father's 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 father.
Father's father's
that
father's
many
father,
times in a row. That? Legitimately, I could be the protector of Scotland and the next king.
Well, you've probably got enough on your plate as it is, really, haven't you?
Why are you trying to...
I'm not!
It just seems a bit of a negatron when it comes to my royal blood.
Yeah, but we haven't even decided... Braveheart wasn't royal.
Well, no, but, you know, if you're going to go for a figurehead, you're going to go for him.
Yeah, but don't say royal blood. Just like, you know...
I think it's royal.
Just
it's,
say...
It's royal-esque.
Your father's 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 father was a bit of a fighter.
Yes, he was.
And he was an angry man.
He once stabbed a man in Dundee and had to flee.
The only fact I know about Dundee is that, for such a small... Well, two facts. Lorraine Kelly comes from there.
That's right.
And the other one is, for such a small town...
City.
For such a small town...
City.
They've got two football teams.
They do.
But they're right beside each other.
Well, it's the spirit of friendship, isn't it?
And, but they don't get on.
Well, it's a spirit of friendly rivalry then.
See, I think, you know, if you're going to have independence, just have the border going through those.
Just them. Yeah, yeah really.
But, so I've been to Dundee a couple of times. It's not... I, everything... Like, See, I'm kind of like, obviously, where there's a lot of sexual tension between the two of us. We're both Scorpios as well. But also, you had the exact same thing of, I was moved around a lot as a kid. And that affects your personality, big style.
I think so. I think...
Because you're going to different schools and you have to make new friends all the time.
Yeah, I think absolutely. And have you got brothers and sisters?
My father's got me. No, I've got two brothers. Yeah.
You got two brothers. So you were always part of a gang. So you always had other kids to hang out with.
No, you didn't really hang out.
No?
I used to hang out in a gang.
Oh, but they a proper gang.
Yeah, but this is how ridiculous my life was. I was in this gang, and when there wasn't anyone else to fight,
right,
they'd pick on me.
Oh, and there wasn't squabbling.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of people to fight, so I was just picked on by them.
How many were in this gang?
About six.
There's five guys just picking on you. And what was the name of this gang?
No, it wasn't. See, I think you've seen West Side Story to
Is it called times. Like? Was it called like the Black Spider Gang or something?
It was called the White Lies.
The White Lies.
Yeah.
Ah.
We used to have a song, right? And it went a bit this.
Oh yeah.
It went a bit like this.
This fear's got a hold on me. Yes, this fear's got a hold on me.
White Lies, song called Death. They ran out of... I don't like it when people just repeat the same thing at the end. Just cut it, Danny. Don't you just cut it. Just cut it.
Imagine if you just did that on your show. And just the last minute was just you just constantly saying, you know...
Here's Danny... it'd be like, here's Danny Wallace, here's Danny Wallace, here's Danny Wallace. Which I've done, so now I feel just as guilty.
Yeah.
So now we've only got... we've only cracked the surface of your life. Your father was a spy.
Yep.
And so he was... did any of his East German knowledge rub off on you?
Of specific... Sort of, you mean in terms of the writers and the exiled experiences that they went through pertaining to Eastern German...
I think I might put another track on.
Yeah. No, it didn't. It didn't at all. Okay. Yeah. It took me long enough to say that.
Yeah. We're losing it. So then you kind of, you were travelling all over the place. And then you went to university.
Yep.
And what did you study yourself at university?
Well, I'd been working on magazines in Bath, you know, from when I was like 14 or 15. And so I was always writing about stuff and I was always having these ideas and I wanted to do a course that would teach me how to make my ideas real. So I did kind of like an advanced radio course, media studies at London Westminster.
Okay.
It's the best thing I could have done because suddenly I wasn't that interested in writing the essays or attending the lectures, but it was learning to use the stuff and study how people make things.
What kind of stuff are you writing for the magazines in Bath?
I started off writing about video games because it was work experience at school and they said, right, we've lined some stuff up for you. You can either go and dig some ditches in the local garden centre can alphabetise things at this sort of accountant's office. And I went, maybe I'll try and sort this out. And I knew there was a games mag in my town, and so I just hassled them, and they let me in.
You sent your dad around with the whole East German.
With the East German contingent, exactly.
Yeah. You're not a gamer, though, surely?
I was, and then I came out of it, but still enjoyed writing. I do play a few games these days, yeah. I'm in some games, in fact.
Well, what's your favourite game?
Well, I like the sort of shooting games.
Yeah, my favourite is, you can get it on, it's free, it's online, it's called Tesco's.
Tesco's?
And yeah, what you do is, you feel like a spy, because you're given a pass name and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then within your budget, trying to buy your groceries.
Like a virtual supermarket.
Yeah, for the week.
Ah.
And then, like, unlike your game, where when you shoot them, they don't come around to your house a couple of days later and try and shoot
you
back.
No.
Tesco's, what they do is 2 days later... They come round with some of the stuff you've ordered.
Doesn't seem like... I mean, how... That's not a sustainable business model.
Well, no, you pay for it, but like, but as I say, like...
Well, then you get the stuff that you've...
Yeah,
in the game.
Yeah, you pay with your budget, and then you order the stuff. But they have their little game where when they don't have something that you've asked for...
Yeah.
They'll say, we didn't have any vegetarian sausages, here's a turnip.
Uh-huh. Oh, right, okay, well, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
so
nice.
It's always different,
I think my wife plays that game. Every now and again, I see a sort of delivery, and she ordered some potatoes 2 days ago, and we got, what do you call it, a potato ricer. Instead, which is a big metal thing.
Was that a good meal?
No, it wasn't.
Right, and did you complain? Because, you know...
I don't know, she just played it wrong, so...
Yeah, I've guessed. Yeah. So it was her mistake?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
And so your wife, what does she do then?
She's now being a mum, and before that she was a publicist, and before that she was a journalist.
Jeez.
Yeah.
How lazy.
It's an easy job, isn't it? Yeah, so easy.
Unbelievable. So then after you finished university, what happened then?
After
it says on my notes you became a BBC producer at 22.
Yeah, that's what happened next.
I did a
traineeship at the BBC. Because I'd been writing, for other magazines and stuff, and I'd written for Melody Maker and the Perrier Comedy Award. They wanted a load of people to go up and judge that. And they got me on board, I think because I was younger and I worked for Melody Maker. So they were like, you know, we'll get at least one
judges.
Young person. Yeah, then I met this bloke that said he was an editor at the BBC, and I assumed that meant someone who...
Hang on, who won the Perrier the year you were judging?
It was Al Murray, the pub landlord.
Okay, and did you vote for him?
I can't remember.
Well, that's a no then.
It was a close run. It was a very close run year. That's all I'll say about that. And then this guy offered me a job at the BBC, and I started working there. And then I stopped working there, and I started a cult.
But so yeah, we'll obviously get on. That's what you're most famous for. But 22 still seems to be a bit young to be a producer.
It can do. I had a lot of sort of experience under my belt in terms of seeing live comedy, and I'd in fact launched with a couple of friends at this publishing company a mag called Comedy Review. you, which meant that, in fact, I think I interviewed you once over the phone, once or twice maybe even.
On the phone? Cheapskate.
Yeah, well, we were based in Bath. Well, you know.
We were travelling all over the place.
Yeah, it's true. So then I started working there, which was great, which was brilliant.
But did you ever do comedy yourself then?
No, nothing like that at that stage, no. I think that the right time, if I was going to ever have done it, would have been then. But after the Comedy Review closed, I couldn't try my hand at it because everyone would have gone, oh yeah, journalist trying his hand at it, thinks he can do it. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but you probably need a couple of years to be quite bad. And yeah, there would have been two very long years for me. And then I went to the BBC and became a producer. And then I couldn't do it after that because people would have gone, oh, yeah, producer thinks he can do it.
And so, like, were you able to, when you were producing at the BBC, like, were you writing comedy, like, you know, like...
Written, you know, stuff, bits and bobs, and then worked with Dave Gorman a year or so later and wrote with him and wrote with other people and, carried on from there, really.
But so, so basically the vibe I'm getting is you always wanted to be a writer. That's what you always wanted to be.
I think I've always I probably didn't know I wanted to be to start with,
but you
found
said
it quite
from about 10 you were writing for magazines.
Well, that's because I love video games and I was like, get me in there and give me free games. Right. And then being able to write meant that I could get more free games, and then I continued, and I guess I always found it not easy, but you know what I mean? It came naturally to me.
Well, no, like, certain writing is very hard. Like, you've had some tremendous success. I think lazy writing is, you know, you get those people who just think because they're a name now, they can write kids' books.
Absolutely.
Well, you know,
hate those guys. Hate those guys.
So what are you up to next?
I'm writing a kids' book soon.
Oh, brilliant.
And that'll be, God, that could have been awkward because you set that up in a way
I knew you could handle it. Unlike Jack Nicholson.
But it's not one of those picture books with sort of six words a page.
It'd be a pop-up.
Yeah, it would be great if it was. No, it's a high concept kind of...
No, but we'll get to that.
All right.
So basically, after you worked with Dave Gorman and stuff, then you decided to start this cult.
Yeah, I'd left the BBC and I'd worked with like the Bush and Ross Noble. And
before they
like
were
that.
Mighty, yeah?
Before they were mighty. They were just the Bush.
Okay.
That's literally, they just at one point they went, we just want to be known as the Bush from now on. Yeah,
this isn't a great series, just call it the Bush.
Yeah. I sort of just wanted to not be in an office anymore.
And what age were you at this point? 23?
24, 25.
God, you've really crammed it all in.
Yeah, you? I sort of, I like to move, I like to do different things all the time.
It's all that royal blood, I guess.
It is.
But when you say the cult, was this originally just an idea or was this always going to be a book?
Not originally. It was going to be something I tried. And then the publishers who had been keeping their eye on me since a book I did with Dave were like, what are you up to? The people who joined my cult, because essentially, in a nutshell, what happened was I put an advert in the paper saying, join me, and people wouldn't know who they were joining or what they were joining or why they were joining or even what joining meant, and I didn't know either at that stage. I just wanted to see if people would join, and join they did. Initially one guy who I arranged to meet with, and we had a slightly awkward pint.
Yeah, that must have been weird.
It was a bit weird, because he was kind of going, so what is this join me thing? And I'm... I don't know, but I want to keep him because he's mine now. And I'm going, that's people joining together, just people as one. And he's going, well, how many people? I go, well, numbers. It's not, you know, it's not
about numbers.
No way. You know, you're not a number, you're a man. Let's move on.
But were you kind of starting to ferment what the cult was at this point?
No, it wasn't until I had a few hundred people and one of them left that I thought, I've got to make it something so that no one leaves.
Why did they leave?
Well, they left because they weren't getting any information and they were looking to this unknown man because I was keeping anonymous.
And what, you didn't have to pay to be a member?
No, nothing like that. Oh, well, at one point I was thinking maybe I could use my powers for evil, that'd be good. But instead I chose the path of righteousness and decided that if you were going to be
in... Were you doing a job at this point as well?
I was...
Or was this just a proper...
I was keeping bills paid
proper
by...
Proper full mental breakdown.
It was, there could have been an element of that in there. No, it was, I was writing for various newspapers and magazines and keeping bills paid that way. And seeing what happened with it. And what happened is thousands and thousands of people joined. And I made it about doing good deeds every Friday.
Yeah, which was a beautiful thing.
It was lovely. It was a great
fun
thing.
But that came much later on then, yeah?
The idea of doing good deeds came later, because I was realising that I was losing people. Yeah. I was losing control. And if I gave them something, a mission, then at least they would go, all right, well, there seems to be a point to this. But I was always kind of, I was having to think on my feet the whole time, especially because there were a couple of people who were really, really paying attention to everything and were trying to work out what my grand plan was. And were kind of nipping at my heels.
But anonymously, this was just...
No, I knew who they were, but they didn't really know who I was.
So what? No one ever met up then?
Except
for that first guy.
I met up with him and a couple of others along the way. But I found out one day that five or six of them were meeting up.
Behind your back?
Yeah, it was on the forum. God. So what I did was I sent a motorcycle courier with a jiffy bag, and in it was a disposable camera and a dictaphone. And on the dictaphone was my voice being very pompous, just going, "It is I, the leader. Here is your mission." And I set them a mission. And that was when they went out to make...
To do good on Friday.
Well, initially it was to make an old man very happy. And this
that
they did.
That was you, yeah.
Yes, it should have been. But the best thing happened with that, the most unexpected thing that I just couldn't see coming, which was that at the end of the day, after making all these old guys happy, they found one guy who was sort of shuffling into a pub. He had like a shock of white hair, looked very kind of granddaddy. And they walked up and they said, "Look, we're from this thing called Join Me. We don't really know what it is either, but we've been told we're going to make people happy. Is there anything we can do to make you happy?" And he looked at them and he went, "No." And that's quite a weird thing to say, isn't it? Sort of tugs at your heartstrings.
No, but it isn't really, because that's a London thing, isn't it? Like, you're slightly mistrustful of strangers.
Well, he turned out not to be even from London. He turned out...
He was in London.
He was in London, but he said his car had broken down. He needed to get home to Timothy and Devon. He had no money. He didn't know how he was going to do it. He was sitting in this pub having a half a lager with his last pound, thinking, "What am I going to do?" And then they went, "I think we can help." And they raised enough money there and then to give him a train ticket home and a sandwich for the journey, which was a wonderful thing. That inspired me to spread it out to everybody.
But he initially said, "No, you can't help me with anything."
Yeah, and then he explained his story.
Yeah, but why didn't he just say that at the start? He seems like a loser.
Well, no, it was a nice thing.
It's like
thing.
You know, you see someone's got a knife in their stomach and you go, "Is there any way we can help you?" No.
there's
this knife, yeah.
Yeah.
You can't get that out. That seems a bit like, if he's obviously in dire straits and he just goes, "No."
Well, it was just a sad moment where he was just feeling
maybe
sorry
it's a for
himself.
Scorpio, I mean,
I think it could be.
Yeah.
But anyway, it turned out that that led to me broadening it out and saying we're going to make everybody happy whether they like it or not. I wrote to the guy. 3 days later, the letter returned in the post and I was going, "Oh no, this is... I hope I've got the wrong address or something's happened here." And so I put something on the website and said his name was Raymond Price from Timothy and Devon. This is what happened. About a week later, someone emailed me and said, "I saw that you were looking for a guy called Raymond Price, Timothy and Devon. You'd helped him when his car broke down." And I went, yeah, "Do you know where he is?" And he wrote back and went, "No, but I'm looking for him as well." And there was a website address. And it turned out that this fella, Raymond Price, was one of Britain's most wanted con men who had been doing the same scam for decades.
Right.
Was sitting there in this pub, probably finished his day's work, just thinking, "Well, I'm done here." Some people walk up and just go, "How can we help you?"
Right.
Played into his hands.
That's very... Wow.
Yes. It blew my mind.
Well, yeah, but you must have been very disappointed. Yeah?
Well, I thought, well, now this is all based on, you know, a bad thing. But I thought, we'll fight that and we'll continue it. And I've met up with Raymond Price since a couple of times. I bumped into him and he sat down and he said, "I've read Join Me, and also I'd ruined his scam because for months and months afterwards, he would go up to people who might be in Join Me or who may have read the book, and he'd go, 'I need some money to get home to Timothy and Devon.' And they'd go, 'You're Raymond Price.'"
Right, yeah, no, absolutely. But the thing is, you always, usually... whereabouts was it? Because was it near a train station, though?
It was near Hyde Park.
Right.
But he does it all over. But he said to me he's now given up that scam, because he's got a new one.
And what's
it's better.
New one?
It involves car parking tickets in rich areas of town. That's all I'll say, because I don't want to get him into any more trouble than I've got.
Well, he's breaking the law. He's an outlaw, Danny.
I know he's an outlaw, but he's a cuddly, lovable one.
He basically puts false parking.
I'm not saying a thing.
Well, it sounds like he puts false parking things on.
It can sound that way. It doesn't mean it's
or
true.
Or a clamp.
Could be anything, couldn't it?
False. Well, I don't know why you're protecting this criminal.
Because he's got some quite big mates.
Did he ever pay you back?
No, he never paid me back, but he paid me back in terms of karma. Although I just realised the two times I've met up with him have both been outside pubs, and I did pay for all the beer. So he's winning again, isn't he?
Yeah. And so was the whole Join Me then, where when you do a good deed for someone, is it like a chain where you tell them to do a good deed?
No, it should be hit and run kindness. You go in, you do it, you don't expect anything back, you don't expect the other person to do anything. It's just that moment. Although my favourite story is from a lady in Nova Scotia, and because I like the idea of
sounds like a Pixie song. This
it does, yeah, yeah. How would that go?
No, I haven't got the Pixies lined up. Right. Sorry. I want to get to the end of this bit and then we'll talk about the other book, but I'm still wondering how to pronounce this next band. Haiku Salu. They're from New Zealand.
Pretty good to me.
It's kind of a bit jazzy.
Yeah.
But anyway, so...
Well, right. Very briefly, so she... So the idea is that you can do a good deed, knowing that all around the country and hopefully the world, there are people on that same day also doing good deeds, because then you don't feel like you're taking as much of a risk. You can blame it on Join Me and you can feel part of something. And so this lady was in Nova Scotia, and I'm not quite sure how it works out there, but there was some kind of coffee thing on the side of the road, either a shop or a drive-through thing or whatever. And she...
I think they're called diners.
Could be a diner, but you remain seated in your automobile. So she's there.
Drive-through diner.
Thank you. It's one of those.
No problem.
And she talks to the lady and goes, can I have a coffee? She looks down. She sees that she's got her copy of Join Me with her. And so she says to the lady, can I also just, because it's a thing, can I just pay for the coffee for the car behind me? The woman goes, yeah. Off she goes. Forgets about it. Monday she's back. And the woman goes, you know, on Friday you did that. You bought that coffee. Did you know that woman? And she went, no, I'm in this thing called Join Me. And it's the kind of thing we do. And she said, well, because I had to explain to that woman that you'd bought her the coffee. And so she said, well, I'll pay for the one behind me. Then I had to explain to that guy what happened. And then I had to pay for the one, you know, I'll explain to the next person. And it happened 23 times in a row.
That's lovely.
I don't know who the 24th person was, but we know there's at least one knob in Nova Scotia.
Yeah. But, no, that is lovely. But so are people still doing this then?
Yeah, people meet up. They meet up. And every December we have something called Carmageddon. I think we're on to Carmageddon 13 now, where people come to London, do good deeds, and then go to the pub and get drunk.
And you're still fully involved?
I'm the leader.
Okay.
I'm less involved than I was.
Yeah, that's the...
Particularly because, I mean, I came into cult leadership, I would say, at the tail end of the glory years, when it was all... It used to be kind of making amazing pronouncements off cliff tops and women would throw themselves at you and you'd get loads of money. And for me, it's mainly been quite a lot of admin.
And so how many copies did the book sell?
That I don't know. That I don't know, actually. Quite
well,
a few.
It should be in your statement when your royalty check.
Yeah, I've written a few books, though.
Yeah, but...
Would you just refresh Amazon the whole time?
No, well, around how many would you say?
It's certainly in the hundreds of thousands.
Well, that's brilliant. And so I take it you gave all that money to charity.
Absolutely, right? Absolutely. Take it anywhere you want.
Great stuff. Okay, I love that jacket you're wearing. How much does that cost? 6,000-7,000?
It's pure gold.
This is No You Say It, Haiku Salu, New Zealand band.
It's who what?
Haiku Salu.
One more time.
Haiku Salu. Right. I could talk all over. I don't think there's any lyrics. Thank you. don't know if I mentioned the name of them. Haiku Salou.
There you go.
Yeah, no, nice. You say it. Yeah. That's what the. I wasn't asking you to say it. Yeah. That's the name of this tune there. Danny Wallace, you've been in. Now, we've got up as far as you giving all your money to charity.
That's right.
For the cult. And then you come up with quite big ideas. So then your next idea, was this always going to be a book? This is where you decided to say yes instead of where normally you'd say no.
Yeah. You do it first and you see whether there's kind of something in it. But it would be disingenuous to say that at the back of my mind I wasn't thinking, oh, this could be something. And again, you've got sort of publishers or a track record, so it's kind of easier to get a deal that way, I suppose. But yeah, no, I did it to see if I could do it and to open up my life. And
so
to,
what was the first occasion then?
The very first thing I said yes to, and this was after deciding I'd been, I mean, you know, not going out isn't really a good thing.
Lee Mack's all right, isn't
it? Yeah. You could edit that and get me into trouble with him. But you find that you don't have any experiences or any kind of life anymore. And I'd sort of been like that for a little bit, but I wasn't in any way depressed. I was just kind of very comfortable sort of living that way. Decided to do the opposite of that and to just say yes the whole time. And the first thing that happened was the phone rang, and I was like, this is going to be good. This is going to be my first thing. It's going to be like an invite or something, or it's going to be, I don't know, it could be anything. And I answer the phone, and the guy goes, Mr. Wallace. And I go, yes! And I would have had to have said that anyway.
Yeah.
It would have been,
so
know,
that wasn't.
That
yeah.
doesn't really count.
Yeah.
And it was this guy just
you
going,
said it quite, you know, with
well,
enthusiasm.
I was full of gusto.
Yeah.
And he said, I'm phoning from, and I changed the name, but Mark 1 Double Glazing in London, and just wondered if you'd like a free no obligation quote for double glazing. And I went, yes. And he went, oh.
What did you think you're supposed to say that?
And he said, oh, right, okay, I should come around and give you a quote. And I was like, yeah. And he was like, when's good for you? I went, when's good for you? And he said, Tuesday. And I went, yeah. And he said, two-ish? And I went, yes. And then I realised this man was going to come around my house. And I looked around my flat and I was already double glazed.
Right.
And so I went, thing is, I do, I have double glazing. And he went, you've what? I said, I'm just saying, I do have double glazing, but you can still come round and give me a quote and, you know, we can have a cup of tea, talk about the weather. And he went, are you wasting my time? And I went, yes.
Right.
So that was my first
dare
experience.
How dare he say that, though? When that's what they do to people all the time.
Yeah.
But so there must have been times where, like...
There were hard times, Sean. If that's
was
what
there
you're
any jobs
at.
That you had to say yes to that you would normally have said no?
I found myself doing more work
than
I.
Is that how you got on XFM? Yeah.
No, it's not. I found myself doing all sorts of things. That I mean, I bought a bloke a car from a guy at a party. Because he went, as we were sort of finishing, he went, I don't suppose you'd be interested in buying a car. And I was like, yes. He was like moving. And so I went and I bought this car that I had until just a couple of years ago, but had to sell because I looked ridiculous in it. I'd never seen myself in it because I'd always been in it.
What was the car?
It was this little, have you seen these little Figaros, these Nissan Figaros? They look like something from the 50s or 60s. And they're kind of like weird little, they're girls' cars, really.
Yeah.
And I am sort of boy-shaped. And I looked a bit like a, kind of an action man in a Barbie doll car.
How long did you drive around for, though?
Quite a long time. I should have known it wasn't for me when I was going over all the bumps in London and just hearing the bottom of the car scrape
well,
against it.
That's every bloody car in London nowadays. But there must have been times where there were situations where you just couldn't say yes.
It was absolutely impossible, so long as you had said yes to the thing. So, like, say, if there was a party starting in East London at 7, but there was one starting at 7.30 in West London, I'd go to the party for as long as I could in East London to make it to West London so that I could still have been to the party there. And all that meant was I was at both parties for the most rubbish bits.
But what about if someone, to wind you up as well, would just say, Danny, do you want me to give you a blowjob?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, there's a standard answer to that. But the thing was, I only really told my friend Ian that I was doing it. So I had to keep it as pure as possible. Because otherwise, you know,
but if that situation come up, you wouldn't have said yes, though, would you?
Well, thankfully, I mean, that doesn't really happen that much to me. People coming up and saying sort of things like that.
You live in London,
yeah? Yeah. So I did at one point find myself in a gay leather bar in Amsterdam.
Right.
And I found myself talking very quickly just in case on the off chance anyone suggested anything.
Right.
So I was just dominating that conversation. I was just talking.
But so only one guy knew that you had to say yes to everything. But surely there must have been a time where you didn't say Yes.
Read the book, Sean, and you will see.
Well, they send me notes. They don't send me the book. So then, weirdly, that became a big film.
It did, yeah. It became a big film with Jim Carrey in it. And that was a very unusual experience.
Yeah, that must have blown your mind.
It was, especially. I think the best moment for me was... Jim Carrey, I still can't, you know, I hate it when people, if they've met or know a guy a bit, they start calling him a different name. Like when you see people on chat shows talking about Sam Jackson and you want to go, it's Samuel L. Jackson, yeah. Uses preferred, or Bobby De Niro. So I Bob, always, yeah. I always call Jim Carrey Jim Carrey. Right. So I was, Jim Carrey was over. Go on.
No, I just like obviously we can't just go, and it became a film. So like they just, did they buy the rights to the book?
They did. Yeah.
And did you get a chance to write the screenplay?
They whenever something like that happens, they ask you if you want to do it. But because I don't have great experience in that field and I want the thing to be made, okay. I generally say no because it would slow the whole thing down, ironically, for a Yes Man film. Because yeah. I just think I'd get in the way. I'd slow it down. I'd probably slow it down by 6 months or something. And I'd just like let the people who are good at that do that.
But did you have any approval then?
Yeah. Right. It was all, yeah, they kept me very involved and very nice and flew me over. And
so they just gave you a load of money. And I take it you gave that to charity.
All to charity, yeah, all to charity.
And so that was just a phone call. Like, was it a production company initially, or was it Jim Carrey straight in from the office?
No, it was a production company, and initially it was going to be a Jack Black film. And then it wasn't. Suddenly it was a Jim Carrey film, I think, because Jim Carrey heard about it.
Were you a fan of Jim Carrey, though?
Yeah, you know, I think he's an extraordinarily talented man.
Extraordinarily hyperactive actor.
Yes, he is. Although not as hyperactive offset.
Right.
Although he did do this one really cool thing. We were in, we're on the set, and it was during the writer's strike, so the only thing at Warner Brothers that was being made was, like, one episode of ER and Yes Man. And there's all these tourists who've like booked months in advance to come and see the great Warner Brothers studios, yeah. And there's nothing going on. And they're on this little train, this little motorized train being taken around as a man who has the hardest job in the world now. He's just going, and over here is another brown building, and there's another brown building, and something was shot there once, and there's nothing for anyone to see. And Jim Carrey saw this happening, and he thought, I'm going to sort of do something here. And so he ran at this train and jumped on it and started shaking it like he was King Kong. Initially, everyone thought they were being attacked. Until they looked up and it was noted film star Jim Carrey.
Did he have two big asparagus hanging out of his mouth?
He should have. He might as well have. Yeah. But he just made these people's day. It was like the nicest thing I'd seen. He was just 5 or 6 minutes, but it was great.
But so with the book, it was just a series of events where you had to say yes. So how did the film...
Like life.
Yeah, but what way did the film go about that then?
Well, it kept the beats of the book and the relationships, but it separated from the British version quite substantially because obviously Jim Carrey, isn't it? It's now a Jim Carrey film. And you can't just have, you know, little stories about a bloke who lives at the end of the Mile End Road and goes to, you know, the happy shopper. Yeah, it's got to be bigger.
Your crazy little car.
Yeah, exactly. A tiny, ridiculous car. And so, you know, they sort of went their own way with it and kept lots of things in.
And were you happy with the film?
Yeah, because the book will always exist. The book is there.
Yeah.
I like the film and...
But you don't love it?
No, I'm too close to it to have a real... big opinion on it in that way.
Did you go to the premiere and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And was that the first time you saw it?
No, the first time. I'd seen cuts all along the way and they would send me DVDs and things like that, and then they put on a little showing just for my wife, and I'd seen it, you know, like that. But going to like the premieres was really cool. Especially the first one was in London, and Jim Carrey came over and as a nod,
jumped on this train underground.
Yeah, and they had this double decker bus, and it was me and Jim Carrey on the top deck, and we're driving from Claridge's to Leicester Square, and it's just Jim Carrey on a bus, and there were other buses sort of pulling up and looking over, and then seeing Jim Carrey. I think this was a bit odd. And as we pull into Leicester Square, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who've come to see him, right? There's a roar.
You might as well say thousands there.
Yeah, okay, thousands of people. And they're waiting for Jim Carrey. And this roar of approval goes up when the bus comes into Leicester Square. We're still some distance. And he goes, are you ready for this? And I go, yeah, I think so, yeah. And then from somewhere down below, the best thing happened. Someone just shouted, we love you! And so Jim raises his hand and walks over to the side of the bus, but they haven't finished. And they go, Danny Wallace! And he had to then sit down. I looked over and it was just some of my mates coming out of the pub drunk. But I didn't tell him. I just said, this is my town, Jim.
Yeah, this is how it goes down
here.
So that's going to be.
What?
No, that sounds like... It sounds like it's so many different experiences in that sense. But and the film did well, yeah?
Yeah, it did really well, yeah.
See, I'm not sure if I saw it, but I think I might have seen it on a plane.
Yeah, it's best seen on a plane.
But then I'm thinking I might be confusing it with Liar Liar.
Another high concept, yeah, idea, exactly, yeah. Also starring Jim Carrey.
But yeah, that's the one where he
can only tell the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is... it was like a magic spell.
So isn't that similar to Yes Man, is it?
I suppose he has a magic... No, in terms of a big idea like that, pretty similar. But there's some kind of magic spell and some sub-story about having to get home in time for his child's play or something.
Yeah. Listen, we'll talk on about what's happened since then. So I'll play... see now.
Play another thing you can't pronounce.
Well, no, I could. I pronounced it very well. But I was going to say, look, this is not a slight on you, right?
No, he's pointing at me. This is going to be a slight on
this
me.
This is not a slight with you, but I just love the song. And it's nothing to do with Danny. It's called
Worst Guest Ever.
It's called Getting Away With It.
That's okay, we're insured. Are you aching for the grave? That's okay, we're insured. Getting away with it all, mister.
James, getting away with all my stuff. Danny Wallace has been my... Wait,
watch
out, fella.
What happened there? I like the way you started speaking louder when you faded it out to hide the fact from the listeners that you faded out about a minute before it ended.
Well, yeah, it's just...
James,
I was told that we didn't have much longer with you and we have to talk about more of your charity work.
Yes, yeah, thank
you.
So
now you've got... You're currently... you've got two more books out or you're writing them at the moment?
There's one that came out last week, and I'm writing something else. No, Friends Like These was a few years ago.
Charlotte Street
was a couple of years ago.
Okay. How many books have you got, man?
Quite a lot.
And you give all the money to charity?
Apparently.
Yeah, that's just so fine.
So me.
And so Charlotte Street has been adopted for the big screen as well?
Well, it's with Working Title. Yeah, right. It's a novel.
Hugh's going to be in that, yeah?
Probably Hugh, great I would stuff. Have thought. Yeah, right. Probably Hugh. So we have to see what happens with that one, but who knows?
And have they paid you up front already? Yeah?
You would, you know, you signed the deal.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They've bought the.
They bought the rights. Right, yeah, they bought the rights.
I'm not asking how much. I'm just surprised you dressed so badly with all these adaptations that you got going on. And so right. Have I missed out anything?
Only the new one,
right?
So. Which is called Who Is Tom Ditto, and that came out on Thursday.
All right,
and it's a novel. It's about a man who gets home one night, and so many films and books and things seem to start with someone being left by their girlfriend. Partly because it sets up the story quite nicely, you know, for someone a bit down in their luck. But in this one, he gets home and there's a note from his girlfriend, and it says, "I have not left you, but I have gone. Just carry on as normal."
Right.
So then he has to sort of see what that means, and has he been left, or where's she gone, or he can't now leave her because she's not there to be left. So he tries to track her down. People seem to know that she was going. No one seems to know where. She had a leaving due at work. He didn't know anything about it.
Okay.
And then he stumbles across this group of people who seem to have a real idea of where she is, and they have a very unusual hobby. And that is the .. that hopefully takes
sounds
you into
good,
the book.
Sounds good, Danny.
Well, thanks.
Of course, you didn't bring me in a copy.
No, I assumed you'd have read it. No, I'm joking.
Well, it came out yesterday.
I'm joking. Literally billions of people haven't read it. I don't expect anyone to have read it.
So are you on a big tour of telling everyone about it at the moment?
I will be. I'll be going out in a week or so and doing a tour.
And do you enjoy that?
I do. I do enjoy that, yeah.
Well, so what's it called again?
Who is Tom Ditto?
Who is Tom Ditto? Yeah. And so that's out now.
That is out now.
And we were kind of joking, but you are going to write a kid's book next.
I am right. I'm going to do that.
And have you got, like, obviously not to tell us, but have you got another kind of yes man cult thing in your mind to do much later on?
Well, it's harder with having a kid, you know. You can't
Why?
Just well because you can't just go to Bruges that afternoon or whatever. You've got to, you know, make sure there's pasta in the fridge and so on. So maybe in a while, or maybe it's something I can do, you know. The idea has to excite me, and then you have to see loads of possibilities immediately and go, I need to do this.
And have America, like, because obviously you're involved in the successful film, have they been wanting you to do stuff as well?
They've been very nice, yeah. They kind of they're into sort of the kind of ideas that I have. So I've done, yeah, quite a bit of stuff over there, and the stuff bubbling
all charity,
under.
Charity work?
All charity based.
Yeah, great stuff.
Charity based.
Yeah. Listen, Danny, you've been a real treat, and
you've been a treat.
Well, to be fair, like, you know, I'm a much better interviewer than you, because the one you did with me on XFM was just fucking rubbish.
Really?
It was a pre-record as well. No, actually, listen, good luck with the book, and yeah, just keep the ideas going. And
thanks for the pep talk.
Well, no, it's not a pep talk. It's more like I'm bigging you up here. You know, I'm just saying, well done.
Thank you very much.
Jesus, some people just don't know how to take a compliment at all.
Right. Here's the next song, The Greatest Loser in the World.
Right, here's... No, I'll do April Skies, because it's April!
Hey.
Oh, my God, how cool is that? Coming up soon is Mark Morris, from the Blues.
What you're trying to see. As I stand here, don't you walk away.
And it's hard for me to
That was beautiful. She's the Mary Chain, April Skies. I'm delighted. Mark Morris, I have to say formerly of the Blue Tone, so it puts it into it. Because weirdly, the one thing I remember about you is you were from Hounslow.
Yes. That's the one thing you remember.
Well, because nobody ever of any note comes from Hounslow.
Well, you'll be surprised. Phil Collins went to school in Hounslow.
Exactly. Nobody of any note. I take you don't live there anymore, though.
No, I'm a man of Kent these days.
All right, whereabouts?
Tunbridge Wells, sir.
Right, I've played there quite a lot lately. I didn't see you coming to the show.
Oh, were you at the Forum?
Whatever.
Oh, no, the Assembly Hall.
Yeah, well, no, the Forum, that's it. But now you like going on tour on your own, just yourself, yeah?
Well, that's why I would have missed you, because I'm away a lot myself.
Well, of course. But so, sometimes you use some of the old Blue Tones, but you had the reunion and stuff like that, but you're very much, you just want to do your own thing.
Oh,
now.
No, we never had a reunion. We broke up in 2011.
Why did you break up?
It just felt like it was the natural sort of end of the story, really.
Was that because, like sales were going down? Or?
Yeah, that's, all those sort of things all play into your decision, yeah. Of course. You don't feel like you're at the end of the story when you're selling more and more of each release, do you?
Well, if you're not enjoying it, though.
Oh, we certainly were enjoying it.
Right.
But other factors creep into your life, don't they? I mean, your children and...
My children?
Your children
is that why you
kept creeping into our lives. Yeah.
Weirdly, I think during the football yesterday, one of the montages, they played one of your tunes over it.
Did they really?
Yeah, I think...
I missed the pre-match build-up. I got there about 3 minutes after the start with my... I went to my friend's house to watch it. Both of our sons are in the same class and they both support Liverpool, so it's...
Oh, yeah. And what team do you support then?
Liverpool.
But they're nowhere, like you're near the airport, but you're nowhere near Liverpool.
No, it's a family thing. It's to do with my family on my stepfather's side and all that.
Right, it's
from a very early age. Yeah, exactly.
But so now you're basically...
I've got forms to back it up.
You've got... This is your second solo album's come out, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
And are you pretty much constantly just touring as a one-man band then?
No, I do. A couple of times a year I'll tour with a band, but most of the time I just go around playing acoustic shows, yeah.
And what kind of venues do you play?
Well, it's you know, the smaller bars, places like the Forum in Tunbridge Wells. It's kind of 250 capacity venues.
I take you, you throw in a few hits as well.
Yeah, it would be churlish not to.
Absolutely.
I'm not trying to distance myself from those songs.
Well,
no,
you wrote them as well, though, didn't
you? Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, you should be very proud. But it says here, like on the notes, that you do some kind of improvised stand-up, spoken word in between the songs.
Well, I talk to my audience and...
It's talk! It's not improvised stand-up, it's talking!
But it's been said that people enjoy it and have been amused.
What, you like, you go, this next one's called Cornflakes, and then off you go and sing it?
Oh, no, I don't do any of that stuff. Right. Any of the sort of sub-Bill Bailey... No, it's more to do with just anecdotal business or observational stuff from the audience.
Is that a pint in your hand, that kind of thing?
Yeah, exactly. Nice shoes, etc.
Well, I'd love to see you. Are you touring now at the moment then?
Well, I'm on a sort of semi-break. I've got one gig this week I've got two this week actually. I've got one in Maidstone in Kent, which is nice.
Right.
Because it's not far.
Happy days.
One in London on Sunday. And then...
Where's the one on Sunday?
It's the Stag in Hampstead.
Well, tonight that is, so go along to the Stag in Hampstead.
That's tonight, of course, yeah. It's from 6 p.m. there's going to be...
6 p.m? Are you the support act?
No, it starts at 6 o'clock. I'm going to be unveiled at about 9:30.
Unveiled? What are you wearing?
Well, come along and see.
Okay, well, Mark Morris, the Stag in Hampstead. So, look, you're going to start off, you're going to play a tune now. What one have you got in mind?
This is a song called It's Hard to Be Good All the Time, and it's one of the ones from my new record.
Okay, well, good luck with that.
Thanks very much. I'll just crack into it, shall I?
Crack into it there, Mark.
Sell yourself as a saviour. Sell yourself as a saint. But judging from your behaviour, it's pretty clear that you ain't. Do you carry a darkness you can always suppress? And how long you can keep it down? Well, that's anyone's guess. And it's hard, yes, it's hard to be good all the time. It's hard, yes, it's hard to be good. the days when the glorious rays of the sun would warm your senses. It felt like nothing you did had consequences. Oh, through the nights when the moon came untied and went drifting into space and left you here back in the world building fences. You are the scream of a jet. You are a whispered amen. It's not a question of if anymore, 'cause it's a question of when. 'Cause it's hard, yes it's hard, to be good all the time. It's hard, yes it's hard, to be good. Through the days when the glorious rays of the sun would warm your senses, it felt like nothing you did had consequences. Oh, through the nights when the moon came untied and went drifting into space and left you here back in the world building fences. La di di da, la di di da, la di di da. Rays of the sun would warm your senses. It felt like nothing you did had consequences. Oh, through the nights when the moon came untied and went drifting into space and left you here back in the world building fences. Left you here back in the world building fences.
Lovely, Mark. Mark Morris there from an album from A Flash of Darkness.
That's what it's called, yes. Yep. That's right.
That's the name of the album. And so this album was funded by Kickstarter with getting pledges.
That's right, that's right. It was the pledge music.
Is that the way forward, yeah?
Well, it's proved fruitful for me.
So does that mean like you'd wait until you got a certain amount of money, then you'd know what studio you'd make it in? Or
No, I think you have to kind of assemble a budget before, because then you have to know what your target is, really. So you don't. It's not like you collect all the money and then see what you've got to play with. Although, obviously, that can change.
Yeah.
As it did for me, because we went right through our target by about 250. We went got to 250% of our initial conservative estimate. Well, yeah, I mean, couldn't believe it. So that enabled me to just pay everybody and manufacture the record and service it to all the people who'd pledged on it.
So is this your own label now as well, yeah?
Well, I did it that way, and then because the record then reverts to me, and it's not owned, you know, it's not releasing to the public when it's done by pledge. So I was able to then find a new home for it, so I signed with Acid Jazz. And as I was able to then just say, here's the finished record, and it's been bought by, you know, like 1,000 or so people. Right. And but there you go, really.
Are you selling the actual CDs at the live gigs now as well?
I'm doing that as well, yeah.
That's the best way to do it.
Well, it helps, you know, pay for the petrol money and that sort of thing, but there's something nice just about seeing your record in the shops and seeing it available with all the other grown-up records, you know.
Yeah, but there's hardly any record shops left anymore.
No, I know, that's true, but it's able to have more of a presence because I got it through a label. I've sort of given them this finished record, so there's no costs for them, so the money can then go into just promoting the record and selling it. And Making videos for it and making posters
for it. So have you been making
it.
Videos,
yeah? Yeah, it's been...
So people see that on YouTube, I guess.
Exactly, yeah. And there's extra marketing, and these are all boring things, but it just gives the record a longer life, I think.
Well, because how long did it take you to write this one as well?
Well, it was written over a period of probably 18 months to 2 years at the end of the Blue Tones life.
Right.
And then... two or three months to record it, going in two or three days.
That's quite a long record, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't recording every day. Again, working it around just because I'm gigging all the time. Right. It was like doing two or three days a week in the studio.
But you obviously love gigging.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's where all the rewards are for me in terms of, you know, you get the feedback from an audience about.
But, you know, I totally agree with you, but it's that thing of, like, because I take it with the Blue Tones, you were doing much bigger venues and stuff.
Yeah.
But are you enjoying this much better than that?
I wouldn't say I enjoy it more because I had a great time in the Blue Tones, yeah. And I very much enjoyed being part of a group.
But see, also, that's the thing, because, like, you know, obviously just this last couple of months, everyone has been kind of going on about the anniversary of Britpop. And even though you were there, but you weren't really part of that scene, though, were you? You were just a good pop band who happened to be around at that time.
Well, I think, I like to think so as well. I mean, we just got kind of sucked into things a little bit because of the way we looked, but we were just a guitar band with a kind of, it sounds awfully old fashioned, but we just wanted to be like XTC or Squeeze or, you know, just a guitar pop band. Not, we didn't necessarily have a manifesto of Cool Britannia and.
Well, yeah, you were in Hounslow, so that was never going to happen.
Thank you, of course, yeah.
but it is that. Did you get involved with any of the kind of, like, with all the kind of stuff they've been doing about Britpop, or did you just say I don't want to talk about
it? No, I talk about it. I mean, I'm not. I've got a record to promote as well.
Yeah, I guess,
new record to promote as well. So I don't want to be churlish about it either. And it's. I'm quite happy to play along and reminisce. I realise it means more to other people than it does to me.
Yeah.
I'm not totally down on it at the same time.
But did you used to hang around? Was there a scene that you were hanging around in?
There was a scene, but we never hung around in it. There was that Camden scene, you may recall.
Yeah, the Good Mixer.
All around the Good Mixer and the club night at Syndrome and all that sort of thing. But we used to do, that was quite a long way down the Piccadilly line for us.
Absolutely. Well, everything was.
Yeah.
But, as I say, handy for the airport, but not for the...
Not for nothing else.
For the scene.
Yeah.
So, listen, you're going to play another track. And is this off the new album as well?
Yeah, OK. This is a song... This is another little song called... This is The Lie, and That's the Truth.
OK.
This had a video made for it, Sean.
I'll check it out when I get home.
I talk to myself a lot more these days, which is good. I dine by myself a lot more these days, which is good. I wake up alone a lot more these days, which is good. I talk to myself a lot more these days, which is good. And this is a lie that I tell myself. 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 Talk to myself a lot more these days. Which is good. I dine by myself a lot more these days. Which is good. I wake up alone a lot more these days. Good. I talk to myself a lot more these days. Which is good. And this is a lie that I tell myself. 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 Talk to myself a lot more these days.
I thought that was a tricksy ending there. I thought I wasn't expecting that last flourish. I was ready to come in.
Sorry about that.
Oh, yes, it could have been a nightmare. You've been listening to
Thank God Mark. You can think on your feet.
Whew, I'm sitting down. Mark Morris from the new album, A Flash of Darkness. So it's available in the shops, but also people can just get it the usual
iTunes.
They can
bowl up at the shows and get it, and it's on iTunes. Yeah. And yes. Yeah.
Have you got a website as well? Yeah?
Yes, it's markmorrismusic.co.uk.
I'm liking it. Nice ring to that, Mark. And see, the other thing is, I didn't realise until I was given the notes that you collaborate and toured with the... Matt Berry as the Swedish Twins?
That's right, yes. We did something in 2010 where we wrote a handful of songs together and embarked...
So how did you kind of meet in the first place?
We were just sort of on a social level. We had sort of mutual friends and we'd see each other.
Oh, same. I thought you said you didn't socialise.
Well, that was then. This is now.
As you got older, you started
socialising. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right, go for it.
I've got more things to escape from now.
Right.
And we did a couple of little charity things where, I mean, he's done at that point, he'd done two albums.
Yeah, he's a proper musician.
Yeah, he's a brilliant musician. And we did a couple of charity gigs where we play together and did one of his songs and one of my songs. And then,
were these comedy songs or?
Well, no, it was we did Slight Return together because he's a big fan of that song, likes
Who
playing it.
Who isn't?
Well, I don't know. Well, I'm not.
Well, you don't like playing it?
No, of course I do. I'm joking. But,
do you want to play it now?
Really?
Yeah. We have time.
Go on then, I'll get into it. Why not? What the heck?
Thanks very much.
Let's just play along with this whole nostalgia trip.
Yeah, well, no, it's now. You're alive, you've written it. It's your song.
It eventually evolved into that now I'm a member of his backing band, now that he's touring with a seven-piece band.
Right, start singing the song, Mark.
There we go. Right, we ain't got long, have we? No. Right, Slight Return, take one. Where did you go when things went wrong for you? And when the knives came out for you, where did you go? All you needed was a friend. You just had to ask and then you don't have to have the solution. You've got to understand the problem and don't go hoping for a miracle. All this will fade away, so I'm coming home. Yes, I'm coming home. What did you learn? Locked away all on your own, your chance and your head all blown. What did you learn? It was unfortunate. You missed your chance to find out that you don't have to have the solution. You've got to understand the problem and don't go hoping for a miracle. All this will fade away, so I'm coming home. Yes, I'm coming home. This is where the guitar solo would normally be. And so, I'm going to just sort of...
That's all right.
Go over it. I'm going to cut it in length.
Shall I do a shipping forecast and you tell me when to stop?
Go on then.
It's going to rain later on.
A bump, 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 bump. You don't have to have the solution. You've got to understand the problem. And don't go hoping for a miracle. Yeah. All this will fade away. I'm coming home. Yes, I'm coming home. Yes, I'm coming home. But just for a short while. So fade out now.
It's cloudy with showers. Thank you.
should probably check the tuning before I start.
No, that was lovely. Thank you so much for doing that. I really appreciate
that's all right.
it.
You're welcome.
So, Mark Morris, as I say, best thing to do is get on the website, really, to see where you're playing.
Yes, all the information's on there, and access to CDs and merchandise and whatnot.
What merchandise are you selling?
T-shirts, posters of yours truly. Yeah, and records.
Oh, well, listen, thanks so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. And like, you know, the three songs, they could have easily been on the same album, so you know what I mean.
Sir.
You know, that's all I'm saying, fella.
Thanks very much. And so I've not lost it.
Do you want me to come to all the gigs to do the guitar solo weather report?
Would you mind?
Yeah, just give us letters. I'll look at the website.
We can coordinate this. We can work around each other's diaries, yeah, easy.
Have you got a diary?
Yeah.
All right, good on you. But have you got a young family as well now?
Yeah, I've got two children now.
Right, so, you're bringing them up as Liverpool supporters.
Yep.
Oh, things have changed.
Well, you know, you can't say they're glory hunters because we've not really won that much.
Do you think they're going to win?
I hope so.
Well, can I just say, tomorrow...
It's a big game.
You're playing my team.
Palace?
Yeah. And
well, you've put the scuppers on a few teams this season, but I think you're probably already on the beach, aren't you? Because you've saved us.
Have you been to South London? There's no beaches in South London.
But
Mark.
Your players are thinking. I know, they're thinking because not many of them are going to be in the World Cup.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
It's a nice, easy summer.
Yeah, but Tony Pulis won't let them rest up. Have you not know anything about Tony Pulis? He has them like doing yoga.
Well, even over the summer.
No, but what I'm saying is like they'll have a break, but they won't. Like Tony Pulis is not going to go, listen, lads, we're mid-table, let Liverpool off the hook there. Because also Liverpool.
I know he won't. But the players themselves will be thinking, I don't want to be in Torre Manilos with my ankle in a cast.
Yeah, they'll also be saying, I'd like to be in the team next year. See, it works both ways, Mark.
I suppose so.
Well, that's our football banter done.
I'm just hoping against hope that you're on the beach.
I hope Liverpool win the league, actually, to be fair. But listen, thank you so much for coming in, and thanks so much for doing the three songs. We look out for you. As I say, go on the website, and you're looking as mighty fine as normal. I will play a song. Do you know Bill Fay?
No.
Okay, this will shock you then. This is a beautiful song. Called Big Painter, by the way, by Bill Fay. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Thank you.
Oh,